Welcome to the Smarter, Wealthier podcast, presented by Jags Mechanical, with your host, Spencer Dillinger, and co-host, Gabe Rogers. And here they are.
All right. Today, we are going to be talking about what great techs have that others don't. What sets the really incredible techs apart from, you know, the mediocre ones. And I'm here with Gabe Rogers talking about, you know, what those big and small differences are between techs that really sets people apart.
Right when you started talking about that, I started getting
goosebumps because it was so cool.
Yeah, so cool. I started laughing because the biggest difference is I have better tools.
Yeah. Milwaukee versus DeWalt. We'll get into rigid. That a little bit. Rigid. No.
You can start a fight real fast.
All right. Well, in your experience, you know, what stands out to you about the techs that really go, you know, above and beyond and go far in the trades?
Well, one of the things that I've recognized with guys that do really well in the trades is always their willingness to go and figure it out. And I think we talked a little bit about this a while ago. It's a lot to do with I've never seen this thing. I don't know what it does, and I don't know where to start, but they go start and they go do it. And it's funny because me and my wife are talking a lot about how me and her handle different things differently, how she needs to analyze it for a while before she makes the decision and makes the move and look at every little thing and get all this information before she starts. And I'm the type of person that's like, let's jump in and see what's going on, and then let's make the decision. We'll figure it out as we go, almost. And what I've seen a lot of technicians who struggle, and it takes them a long time to ramp up, is they have to see it before they can. They have to have all the information and see exactly which direction this thing's going before they make that decision to start working on something.
Yeah, I also think that you kind of touched on the issue of when you're a brand new tech, you kind of have this expectation that at some point every job you go on is going to be something you've seen before. Yeah. And when you're an experienced tech, you're just like, oh, cool, something I haven't seen before, you know, and you dive into it.
So yeah, and that's,
I think some of that comes with experience, but some of it's your approach to work.
Yeah, one of the things with the experience thing is just you're so used to being put in those situations that no new situation really throws you for a loop, which is almost at once you start doing the types of work that we do, doing a new thing is just pretty standard. Like, if you didn't do something new today, you're kind of like, oh man, this is a bummer of a day. But I've noticed a lot of technicians, and especially some of the guys we have that's been here a while, the guys that are like, yeah, we'll go figure it out, those guys always do really well, and they figure it out. That's one of the qualities that I always like to see or hear from a guy. It's like, I think in the NFL, the number one ability that most coaches, GMs look for is availability. And availability is, hey, I'll go figure it out. I'll go see what's going on, which is a massive thing for someone that's in charge of something. Like, hey, these guys are available all the time. But number two is actually taking a job to completion. Like, yeah. Hey, I found out that the thermostat was bad. I know that it's wrong. I jumped it out and made sure that it ran, and they need a new thermostat. I can't get this specific thermostat, whatever it is, for X amount of days. Yeah. And then they leave and never come back. That's a bad technician. A good technician is the type of guy that's like, hey, I have to get back out here when this thing comes in. They're keeping customer updated. Then they show up, put it in, observe it, do the things that's supposed to do, washing it to completion.
It's kind of interesting the way you just described it. It kind of sounds like the, you know, at the beginning of the call, less analytical, less gathering of data, just getting your hands dirty. And then at the end of the call, more analytical, more gathering of data and verifying that what you stumbled across is actually the real thing.
Yes.
So I just never thought about it that way before. So just kind of.
I would definitely say that. I mean, I believe one of the admins in the office, we were talking last week about, because we've been using the Colby score to rate like all of our people. And
yeah, explain Colby, because I don't think most people are familiar with it, and you're much better explaining what it means.
Yeah, and you can jump in on some of the words. Well, there's four. They're called tools or action tools. I should know this because I literally listened to it last night. We were listening to the Colby scores. But if you get on Colby score, there's four different things. You have fact finder is a action. You have a follow through, and you have quick start and implementer. And based on your score, it's how you operate. It's how you think about things. Your approach to how you do things.
It's not how smart you are, not your personality.
It's just how you gather information, how you do a thing, how you get it to the end, and all that good stuff. And one of the things that we were talking about, me and the other admin were talking about with the technicians, what would make a good technician, is even going back to what we started today with talking about jumping in there. And that's a quick start. If you're a high quick start, you're going to jump in and be willing to go, hey, I'll figure it out why I'm going along. I'm up for anything that's, it's different. But then you also have people that are on the other side, on a different one of the other items is called fact finder. And if you're a high fact finder, you need all of the information. You want as much as you can get and have a ton of data and a ton of things before you want to do anything with it.
Yeah, that would be high on the fact finder. And then what is low?
Low on fact finder? Low on the fact finder means you don't care to have that much information. You'll just figure whatever happens. You'll figure it out. You'll get the information as it's coming to you.
And I wanted to highlight that because I think Colby is one of the unique or more unique, I guess DISC kind of has that, but where high or low is not necessarily bad or good.
No.
It's just how you operate. It depends on what you're going to be doing,
Yeah. I always think of it as like someone who's a really good storyteller is probably a low fact finder because they can take a little bit of information and make a really good story out of it.
Yeah.
And someone who has a high fact finder is going to tell you the details of every little detail.
Maybe a better professor or something.
Yeah, I could see a movie director being like a high fact finder because they're going to put all the details in the backgrounds. They're going to put all the details in the stuff going on around them.
Or at least they have somebody on set that's...
That's doing it. Like, I always look at it as it's very detail-oriented.
Okay, so before we get too far from it, you've explained what Quick Start is. You explained what fact finder is. So what is follow through?
Follow through, you're going to have to help me with this one because the reason I say you're going to have to help me with it is I've never really read this all the way through. Because I think it has a lot to do with almost what it says, follow through. Like, hey, I'm open for commitments.
Yeah, follow through is the one that always throws me because it doesn't actually have to do with like tenacity or like going all the way through a thing. It's how you initiate action. It's like, do you work better in a system, which would be like you need structure to be able to do your work and be consistently happy. It's like you need somebody else's structure that they've built around it. That would be low on follow through. And that would be high on follow through. You excel at creating and maintaining systems and structure. In the middle, you adapt to existing systems or plans. And then on the low side, you're very adaptable and flexible. You thrive in unstructured. So I always forget that follow through is really about structure. And the higher it is, the more structure you need and are willing to create. And the lower end, the less structure. Even if you like structure, like as business owners, a lot of entrepreneurs are like, yeah, systems are great. I want systems in my business. But they're really bad at following the systems, you know. And that would be because they're low on follow through. And that's not, you know, that's important because you have to be flexible to start a business and to run it. But
that's the truth.
On the other side of it, to sustain a business and sustain growth, you've got to have systems and you got to follow them rigidly. You got to have people that follow them. You got to have high follow through people.
Absolutely.
So.
And that leads us into implementer, which is the last one.
Implementer, you know, this is one that we have very few people that are high on the implementer.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one. Every time our EOS implementer explains it to us, it's kind of always like an eye-opening thing. I feel like I learned something new every time he explains the implementer role.
Yeah, the implementer mode describes how a person handles the physical space and tangible objects. And the high, like 7 to 10, they prefer hands-on, tangible solutions, and may build or demonstrate their ideas.
And that's that. Well, if we pause right there, real quick, that's kind of where he talks about when you're a high implementer, you're going to hold on to everything. You're going to be the person that wants to do everything instead of allowing other people to do it. Probably. A person who learns well by visualizing can ride along with that person, but you're not going to do anything because they're going to do everything. What, instead of training you how to do it, they're just going to do the entire job.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because 7 to 10 being hands-on, focused on the tangible world, I think that would affect your mindset to a degree because I'm really low on implementer. I'm 3, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would affect your mindset because if you're dealing with the physical world, there's a lot of scarcity, you know, of physical things. And, like, there's a finite number of everything physical, you know. But if you're more on the low side of implementer and you're more used to dealing with things that are not tangible, not physical, it's unlimited. I mean, like, you can conceptualize, you know, trillions whatever. Of combinations of ideas and things, and so there's no limit. So you might have a little bit more of a scarcity mindset. I don't know. This is brand new off the top of my head because what you said made me think like this might affect the way that you view like the world as like, is there a lot of scarcity or is there abundance? You know,
I gotcha.
I've never thought about that before.
Yeah, but that's an interesting one. That's one to put on the. I'd have put to, on the I'd thinker and go Jeremy. Through with go through with Jeremy. Yeah, I was gonna say that'd be an interesting one.
But all right, so in the middle, you know, 4 to 6, I think this is where you are on implementer. They adapt to existing solutions, restore and repair things, so they can deal with physical and, you know, intangible things. And then on the low side, they envision solutions and work with abstract concepts. And that's where you get, like, in my mind, things are very abundant because if you're dealing with abstract concepts, there's no limit.
Yeah. That's where you get all the wonders and the inventors.
Yeah.
That come up
well,
with
I think
things.
In the middle, too, you have some flexibility.
Well, I'm just thinking out of the 6 Types of Working Genius book when he talks about the wonder and invention. That's where you guys get all your excitement.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another way that we measure technicians and employees to figure out where they will fit best. We kind of blend Colby and 6 Types of Working Genius and DISC and
Wonderlic.
That's more of a, yeah, troubleshooting. I want to talk about Colby, but I don't want to get too far away from the topic about, like, so what... On the Colby score, would you look for in a great technician?
I would love a high quick start, maybe middle to low fact finder. And what would be fantastic, which is the part that most really great technicians struggle with, is completing the paperwork part of the job.
Mm.
And to me, that kind of goes into the
follow through
section of
it's
Colby.
The systems. It's the structure.
It's the structured part of the job, and that's where at the end of the job, you don't need because most of the time, like when one of our customers puts a call in, they're putting a call in that says, my griddle is cold.
Yeah.
Well, that's plenty enough information for me to get started. Some people want to know, I need to know the model number, serial number, voltage.
Is it gas? Is it electric?
I'm already skipping stuff already because I'm not on that level of it. So
that was my first question.
Yeah. Is it gas? Is electric? I just need to know that the griddle's cold.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go out there and jump.
As soon as you look at
it,
you're going to know if it's electric or gas.
Yeah, that's the way I'm viewing it. I know once I see it, once I get into it, I'm going to figure it out. And so having that lower fact finder or middle lower fact finder and high quick start is really where all of our really good technicians are scored at. And that's what makes them, hey, I'm willing to go figure this thing out.
So follow through, you think middle of the road?
Middle of the road would be amazing because most of the time I've talked to a couple of the people who do Colby. Not a lot of time do you see high quick start with high structure, which is the follow through part of it.
Yeah, if you have structure, it's really hard to just start new things. Like if your day is mapped out and an opportunity comes your way, like you can't vary from your schedule without breaking your structure.
And people listening, if you're not sure what your score is, this is a really good way to find out what your quick start is. If you would leave right now and just drive directly to the Grand Canyon, wherever you're at, just go right now. Would you be willing to do that? If you're like, I need to think about it a little bit, probably not the super, super high quick start. If you're like, I could probably do it today, probably more of the middle of the road. And if you're like, no, I need to put a plan together, probably a lower quick start.
Yeah. And I think you have to ask it this way. It's like if you could just pack up and like leave all your responsibilities and go to the Grand Canyon, would you want to do that? Like, is that the thing that, would you be excited by that or would you be terrified? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Because, you know, most of us have responsibilities. We wouldn't actually do that.
Yeah.
But
I like that one. Would you be excited about it? That's a better way to put it.
If it was just like everything on my schedule got canceled for today and tomorrow and my wife texts me right now, is like, hey, I really want to go on a road trip. Let's go to the Grand Canyon. I would be all about it. You know, I would be like, oh, cool. I've never been, you know.
Let's drive there.
Forget everything else I was thinking about doing, you know. But
that's funny. Yeah. And to be honest with you, that's kind of what you're looking for in technicians is my cooler is fan blow hot, as they would say, inside the cooler. If the fan blow hot, that's all the information I need to know that I need to get there and figure out why fan blow hot.
So we've kind of talked about, you know, the approach technicians have to work. What are the soft skills that somebody with no experience in the trades can come in that you're like, that is valuable. That is, they're going to do well at this because they have that.
You know, most of the time you hear this comment all the time, man, they have it. I don't know what it is, but they have it. And that's where the soft skill thing comes into play. And a lot of times it's really, can you look me in the eye and have a conversation that's coherent?
Yeah.
And stay on topic.
I was going to point out the soft skills are actually the thing that customers talk about the most as far as what they're getting out of it, what they want from our techs, mm-hmm. the soft skills.
Can you communicate? That doesn't mean you have a English degree, but it means you can communicate very coherently to somebody and you're like following up on things. And I remember you did a thing, I think it was last year, when you drove around and met with a bunch of potential customers and asked them a question and said, what's the most important thing to them?
Yeah.
And the word communication was the largest word on your whatever.
Word cloud.
Your word cloud.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, asking potential customers like, hey, what's the most important thing about your current vendor that you value or that they lack that you wish that they had? And, you know, communication came out of that as the number one mentioned across the board, and I went to probably 40 different restaurants to put all that together. And you know, talking to AGMs and GMs and facilities managers, That's the thing that they want the most. I've never had a customer ask me, how many certifications does the tech that's coming out here have, or do they pass the NAEP? You know, like, I never have had that. Nobody's ever asked me about the skills of the tech. Now, they've seen techs that don't have skills struggle and been like, hey, you know, this tech came out and didn't know what they were doing. But I think that comes down to communication.
Which, that's what I was getting ready to jump into. One of the things that I've had happen before is we have a really, really, like, unbelievable, great technician, certified out the wazoo, knows how to do the job, does a really well job, and had a real hard time communicating, didn't really, like, mesh with the customer and just, like, didn't talk to him, so he just didn't. And, like, we got more complaints about that guy. And all of their stuff was working.
Yeah.
And, like, I had to go out there and, like, have a conversation with that technician separately. Like, hey, you got to communicate. Like, we're going to have to do something if you can't talk to the customer and go through and communicate with them and let them know what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, they're, like, knowing what's going on is so important to the call. If you come out and just do a great job and are a great technician, and then you don't explain yourself, you can end up giving the impression that you don't know anything about what you're doing, even if you're very experienced. I'm trying to think of a good analogy for that, just like a situation that we all go through, that if there was no communication, we would be really frustrated. I was thinking, like, if you went to a restaurant and nothing was explained to you, like, about the there was no menu.
They just brought you food randomly.
Even if it was the best food ever, it's like, you know. But my high quick starts kicking in. I'm like, this sounds pretty cool. I kind of want to go to a restaurant where they just bring me food.
Yeah.
So
I mean, once you go there once, you get it. But, yeah. Like, also, a lot of times the same technicians don't consistently go back to the exact same spot every time. Now, sometimes that does work out depending on relationships, etc. But if a technician, if I go out to X customer and then tomorrow you go out to X customer, are they going to get the same experience, or are they going to get a different experience because that technician communicates differently or doesn't talk the same way? And that comes back to, as leadership and our admins and our team put together systems so that it is the same thing, but to help that out. But
yeah,
that's really a big thing, is making sure that they talk to somebody. Man, I that's so important. Let them know. I always get so worked up when I get a call from a customer, and we were out at that place a day or two ago and told them X part was coming in and didn't. And we didn't get back to them. Mm-hmm. And they were just calling to check in. I'm like, oh, man, like, that's part of the job. It's really physically and, like, and altogether the easiest part of the job to do. So when they don't do it, it's like, man, you missed out on a great opportunity to.
Yeah, and in that situation, I kind of feel like the lack of communication is a symptom of a deeper cause. And I think that comes down to, you know, ownership, which is something that we try to promote with the way that we operate, the way that our systems work. But how do you as a leader in this industry spot a tech who treats the job like it's their name on the truck versus a tech who's just like, you know, I ordered a part, I'm on my way home, and, you know, if it comes in, it comes in, and I'll show up again. Versus a tech that's like, when I did that job and I ordered that part, I'm thinking about it the next morning. I want to make sure I tell XYZ customer if it doesn't come in, like, thinking about it that way. How do you spot that in a technician?
I think this has happened recently, probably within the last couple of weeks, is this is how I've started to see it more clearly, is the systems we do have in place. I'll have technicians reach out and be like, hey, I noticed this part of the system. I've been doing this and I'm not seeing a lot of traction. Can we add this thing in here? Or maybe we remove this and you start getting input on how to make their job easier, and they start being invested in how the actual flow of the job goes so that they can teach the next person that's with them. Or they're like, hey, I noticed that such and such is having a problem with this part of the system. Can we build something different? Or they'll bring it up, and then I always ask them then at that point, hey, do you have any ideas? Throw me something that you think would be better. That's one of the ways that we see that. The other thing is they'll take care of the customer. Hey, admin, send me over. If a customer calls in about that, can you forward that call to me? And they go back to what you said about 5 minutes ago. They're taking ownership of everything going on. And you see it really quick on scorecards. You see it really quick on just their total, like, paperwork's getting done because they're following through on things. They don't have...
It's not Jag's Mechanical Service Call. It's, you know...
It's becoming... Type,
you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I probably have a little bit different perspective on this just because I don't work out with the guys as much. But the way that I spot it is... The way that I see it is when the customer talks about the technician.
Yes.
When the customer that... Because I talk to customers almost every day about, you know, the services that we provide and the techs that we have. And when I hear things about specific techs, when the customer remembers their name, I'm like, okay, all right. You know, there was something there. There was some communication there. They had the start of building a relationship. And sometimes it's obvious they're raving about the specific technician, but sometimes it's just those subtle hints of like, hey, you know, Brandon was out here, or Jackson, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, they know our technicians' names. That's interesting. You know, some of that's on the customer side of it that they care, and some of it's on the tech side of it that they were communicating. And because you don't learn somebody's name if they just talk to you once when they're leaving the restaurant. They're like, hey, I ordered parts. It's going to be fixed tomorrow.
Sign this.
Yeah. But if they're greeting you and getting to know you when they get there, they go do the repair, and then they explain to you what happened and what's been ordered and when it's coming in, and then they communicate with you. You're going to remember their name because you talk to them two or three times, and they're clearly invested in getting you your equipment back online. So I think, kind of summing up what we've said here, you know, your approach to work really matters. That sets technicians apart. Communication and ownership. I think those three are kind of what we're highlighting here today. And I'm sure there's tons more we could go into of what separates great techs from mediocre, but...
Yeah, it goes back to the first thing you said. Which tools are you using?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
That's kind of a joke. I know I'm being funny there, but there's been several times where, like, a technician will grab the wrong tool to do the job.
Yeah, you don't mean branded tools.
You mean
like which tool?
No, well, I was joking about brand of tool, but I'm being serious right now. Using the right tool on the right job is a massive change of like how easy your job will get.
Yeah.
If you use a hammer to screw a screw it in, you're gonna be pounding that screw for a long time, and you're gonna cause all kinds of problems. You're probably gonna Your thumbs are going to be beat to death because you've been hitting your thumbs with hammers trying to hold a screw.
Yeah.
Instead of getting a screwdriver and screwing it in, or an impact and doing it.
Yeah, the one I've seen more often is channel locks on a nut that should have been a wrench.
Yep. Or rounding them out.
I do think, you know, brand of tool tells you a little bit about the techs, you know, especially with us where we're taking people that have no experience in the trades and getting them started and getting them trained. I do think like you learn a little bit about them by what tools they do want to buy. You know, like if you have somebody that's like, I'm going to go get a Black & Decker drill and impact because that's the cheapest one I can think of. They're not very invested in it. Where a lot of the guys that we see that we hire, you know, they're coming in and they're like, we have a, you know, our tool reimbursement program. I think the fact that techs are investing in better tools for themselves and tools that are going to last and hold up, and doing our tool reimbursement program, that's always a good sign to me. You know, they're wanting to have tools that are going to hold up in the field, and they're not afraid to, you know, invest some money into their career.
I remember back in my younger years of being an apprentice, I used someone else's tool out of their tool bag, and he said, you're not feeding your family with my tool bag. I'll never forget him saying that. And so that's always been in the back of my head forever. I probably heard that 20 times from the same guy, like, and it's just, we're on the same lift together and my tools are on the ground. Like, hey, can I use a screwdriver? And he'd be like, you're not feeding your family with my tools. Go down and get your own. And I'd be like, oh man, this guy. And then he would hand it to me, but he constantly would say that. And it's always stuck in my brain as like, okay, I need to invest in something that's going to actually feed my family.
Yeah. Yeah, your tools.
Make sure important. I keep them with me and keep good stuff with me. So.
Yeah, I remember one of my first calls that I actually went and did by myself. Here, there was I got an add-on. You know, I always got add-ons. But there was a threshold to the walk-in cooler that was coming up. Like, the screws had come out of it, and it was loose, and people were tripping on it, and they wanted me to screw it back down into the concrete. And I had my tools that I had had for years as a homeowner, you know, my drill.
Black and Decker's hat.
No, it was little. It was
tykes.
Rigid.
Little tykes. No, I was kidding.
It was actually rigid, but it was like the like lower tier version of rigid. It was not a hammer drill. And you know, I was really struggling even with masonry bits to drill the holes to get the threshold in, and I'm just sitting there for like an hour trying to get, and I'm like, I gotta go get better tools. So I left and went to Home Depot and got a hammer drill and got some better masonry bits and came back 2 seconds, is zip, you know. And it's just like, the tools do matter. Like, the quality of your tools.
I just wasted an hour.
Yeah, I just wasted so much time because I had cheap tools. And from there, I was like, that's when I went on a tool buying kick. Was like, okay, this actually matters. It's not just the price tag. And I mean, some of it is, you know, some of it's the price tag. Sometimes.
I mean, they do make stuff because there's a brand name on the side of it, a little bit more expensive. Sure. But, like, everyone knows that I only work with Klein hand tools.
Yeah.
Like,
well, hand tools are a whole different story.
Yeah.
You know, I've definitely bought some cheap hand tools, and even hand tools of big brands that are respected, some of their hand tools are not great.
No, it's funny because guys will be like, they get in my bag, and I remember when I was running calls all the time, if someone else was on my job, they would put one of their tools in my bag to see how long it would take me to notice that it's not a Klein, and I could sniff it out.
Yeah,
get these out of here.
Yeah, I made the mistake of buying a different brand of linesman pliers, and I remember the first time I got on a job with a guy who had Klein. He's like, actually, it might have been you, because you were like, if you hold on to one side of the linesman and it doesn't fall open, then
get some oil or get rid of them things.
And we tried so hard with.
I remember. I think I remember that I was. I had Zoom spout oiler, WD-40, Croil. I was spraying those things with everything, beating them on the ground.
And that was. I'm pretty sure that was Milwaukee. So, you know, that's where you can't just go off brand name. You got to go off like what is respected for this.
Yeah.
This particular type of tool, you know, Klein's very respected for the hand tool side of it. But anyway,
yeah, that'll get on a rabbit hole right there.
Yeah, we're going way down.
Next time we'll talk about tools.
Hey, we should just do a tool podcast. It'll be more interesting. All right, so I think we've covered, you know, some good thoughts here on what separates great techs from good techs. I think the most interesting thing about this conversation is that most of it is mindset and attitude. Most of it is soft skills. Most of it is, I mean, you need to be good at the job for sure.
Yeah, you have to know how to use the tools we just talked about too.
That's a baseline. You have to have intelligence for sure, and that's important. But beyond that, you know, every tech that is good at the job and actually can do the repair is going to be able to fix things and understand how it works. But great techs, you know, also have the soft skills, also have the approach to work and the attitude. And, you know, on the other side of it, the techs that don't have experience, people coming into this, if you have the soft skills and the attitude, it's going to be easier to get good at it, to get to the point where you can fix things and troubleshoot them. So, all right, that is all for today. We are going to be back next week, and we look forward to sharing more with you. So thanks for joining us on this journey.
Awesome.